Toe Blake's another. I admired Blake entirely. His counterpart over in Toronto, I wasn't so fond of. And there was a great rivalry between the two of them, of course. But Toe Blake just seemed to me to be a man of class. This is a poem called Game 5 again. There's very little action in this book. There's the section that deals with the 67 playoffs, primarily the battle between the Blackhawks and Detroit, between Hull and Terry Sawchuk. But I had to, of course, deal with the finals as well with Montreal, and that what I focused on essentially was a face-off in Game 6 that John Beliveau took and lost, probably the only face-off he lost all year. And he did because Imlach had put a defenseman in to take that face-off, which they had not been doing for a long time. And it's a little bit more complicated than that. But this is a poem called, it's called Game 5 again. It's the pivotal game in the series with Montreal. It was in Chicago, in Toronto. I think they've lost. If they'd lost this game, they would have not been able to win Game 7 coming back here. Game 5 again. And Terry had played two terrible games. He'd played magnificently against Chicago, and then he'd played badly against Toronto and against Montreal, and the Game 4 against Montreal, he was either drunk or still hungover. He wasn't expecting to play, and he looked very, very bad. And so this is Game 5, the game that follows it. After the off night in Toronto, that telegram, and closing down another corner bar. You know who that is, don't you? Over there, all by himself. A bloody sieve is what he was tonight. He walks right into Montreal and stops them cold. How often had he done that over the years? When Toe Blake told his team that Terry'd be the one with Bauer gone, they'd found it hard to hide the grins, advantage to the good guys, Tabernacle. Now they had those clutching, grabbing bastard sons of bitches where they wanted them. How many shaky goalies had the Forum buried? But this time, it was Terry's turn. This time, he gets Backstrom early in the game. Ralph tries that little move again to get an open shot, but Terry sees what's on the way and slides across and slams the door. Then Yvan Cornouaille is in, set up by Beliveau. Then Beliveau himself, point blank. Then Yvan again. But when he turns to shoot, he almost drops his stick. All he sees is Terry charging out to knock him down. Blake knows that rebounds are his only hope that night. He knows the signs, Terry's seeming lack of interest in the game, the lowered head like someone shot his dog, the lazy sweeping in the crease, but lightning quick and always where he had to be. Toe contemplates the sagging spirits on his bench, Tremblay talking to himself, silent Henri punching at the air. Why they always give themselves away, he doesn't understand. He knows the bounce it gives the other guy and glumly, darkly turns away to pace and think. Who to put out with who? The coach's alchemy, the fusion he'd found so often in the battle's heat before. The thought of losing to Imlach made him ill. Those craning peacock looks across the ice, that endless taunting in the press, it made him tired. Such crude psychology, so transparent. It made him mad. It made him mad. And the last poem I'm going to read here. I lived in Montreal twice, the 67-7 period, but I was also here in the early 50s, and I saw my first hockey game in the Forum in 1952. I think my mother tells me Richard was injured. I was only, I think, 7 or 8 at the time. But Toe Blake was actually playing for Montreal at that point. And the goaltender for the opposing team, the Rangers, was Gump Worsley, who came from, of course, Point St. Charles. And, you know, of course, came back to Montreal and became the Montreal goalie much later on. But in those days, he was a Ranger goalie. And he was just as pugnacious then as he always was. And one of the thing that I remember happening is the score was 4-4. And, of course, the Rangers were a bad team in those days, so the crowd was really upset about this. The puck had been in the Rangers' end the whole game. It goes up the other end, and, of course, everybody's paying attention up there on the ice. Worsley, the goal had come off its pipes, which wasn't an easy thing to do in those cases. Worsley spun it around and shoved it up against the boards. The crowd was going absolutely berserk, screaming about this, and Worsley's just standing there staring at the action up the ice, and the referee's trying to figure out what the crowds are getting on about until he turns around and he sees this net turned around. That's the one thing that I remember from that particular game. The poem is called Three Little Jokes, and it has to do with Worsley coming to Montreal in the trade from New York. Richard was out of the lineup that night in 1952. A broken leg had finished Blake, but Billy Ray was there for sure, Locke and Mosdell and Bouchard. But I don't remember any of these. I only see Corporal Saint-Ange, my father's round-faced friend, who'd got impossible tickets for the game, the first I'd seen. At one point, I turned to see his crumpled, laughing face. Now I can't think of him any other way. He warmed in the crackle and heat of the crowd, his eyes lit up by the heckling fan a few rows back. The lowly Rangers had tied the game again. Tabor with those guys. We heard the noisy collapse in the seat behind us, then the leap and raucous blast. Come on, Olmsted, you turkey! I don't remember the outburst itself, only the tears of bliss on Roy St. Ange's face. He'd worn his winter blues that night and had to hang on to the wedge cap when he laughed. And when we were suddenly on our feet, outraged as the play moved into the Montreal end, and Worsley calmly swung the Ranger net around and shoved it up against the boards. Perhaps he needed to catch his breath. The score was 4-4, but the shots were more like 40-10. Or maybe he wanted to needle the crowd. A rookie that year with New York, but a kid from rugged Point St. Charles, he stood out there all innocence, coolly intent on the play in the Montreal end, just as younger, unperturbed, he'd peered up a critical street, having heard the French kids were planning a foray into the point. Years later, he's home, a Montreal Canadian. He drops his bag at the door of the noisy dressing room, glaring at ancient enemies. Nothing new to him here, fighting to keep afloat in a chaos of fireball French. This was how he grew up. This was like any old game tending goal for New York. Still, in the sudden silence, he feels a little disloyal, a bit like a spy. Amused, the players wait to take their cue from Toe, but wonder if Worsley, tough as a stump, might not be just what the doctor ordered. They watch him dump his gear on the floor and shake their heads at the ratty trapper. How well they know it, and what a state it's in. Those ragged pads and that flimsy belly protector. They don't know whether to laugh or cry. As for Toe, he stares at the woeful pile a long moment, pondering life after plant. And what has he got himself into now? Where's the rest of your gear? He finally growls. That's all there is, growls Worsley back. Toe sighs and nods toward the place where Plant once changed. Man, you must be fucking crazy. He shakes his head and turns away. Thanks very much.